Everyone, and welcome to your late Wednesday edition of Scouting the League. Sometimes getting the big time guests you want means a later release time, and that's just what we have today. Really excited to have our guest on today. We will talk post All-Star games, February meetings, what do those entail, and all the preparation now that goes into the combine. Before we jump in, let me remind you to like, subscribe, and share this podcast on whatever platform you are listening. Follow us, give us a 5-star review, jump on your desk at work, just whatever it takes to get the word out there, do it. Make sure you help us out. As always, joined by Neil Stratton of Inside the League. You can find Neil at Inside the League on X. I am Roderick David of Right Step Advising, at Right Step ADV on there for me. And today's guest, we're not going to waste any time, a veteran of 19 years in the NFL, roles all over the scouting department, most recently the college scouting director for the Tennessee Titans, Blake Bedingfield. Blake, welcome to the program. Great to have you on.
Hey, it's great to be here. It's good to see Neil and Roderick.
Good. Well, you may think it's great to see us. Everybody else is just happy they only have to hear us. So, you know, that separates you from them. But Blake, like I said, welcome. 19 years. Tell us a little bit about your scouting journey. Kind of set it up. What is your expertise in this area?
Yeah, I started scouting. My first draft with the Titans was 1999. Actually, Tennessee Oilers at the time before they became the Titans. And went up through the ranks, scouting assistant to area scout, did a lot of pro scouting, advanced scouting, and then ultimately the end of my career, the director of college scouting with the Titans as well. Worked in the XFL for a year with the Houston Roughnecks, the undefeated Houston Roughnecks, and that AAF league that kind of folded, but enjoyed that process. Now I do a lot of consulting in the NFL. I work with some agents through Inside the League and Neil Stratton, and also work with a few teams as well. But also I have a company called X3 Performance that trains our players for the combine. One facility in Nashville and another that's in Fort Myers, Florida that I work with, help train players, college players for the combine.
Perfect. So both your expertise from your time sitting in the room to now the other side of it, it gives you some really unique insight. As you think about all the drafts over the year that you had, and I'm not even going to get into the who can claim the Oilers, Houston or Tennessee. That's a debate for another day. Who are some players that you really think about? Again, when you start thinking about your time back on all these drafts you've been involved with, who are some players that come to mind?
You know, Javon Kearse was the first round pick in 1999, completely changed the defense for the Titans, which was a good team, 3-8-8 seasons in a row during the transition and move from Houston to Nashville. Had an emerging team with Steve McNair at quarterback, Eddie George at running back, Samari Roll at corner, had some established veteran players, but needed that star player on defense. And Javon really gave that to the team. Chris Johnson was another player that, you know, there was a lot of debate on who to take at running back in that draft. And, you know, we took the chance on the home run hitter and he became exactly that. Chris was an excellent player. I think some players that I really liked that were in later rounds were like Cortland Finnegan, seventh round pick out of Sanford. That's where scouts really kind of make their money and make their mark. Stephen Tulloch, an inside linebacker from NC State. But then one of my last drafts, well, not the last draft, but one of the last drafts with the Titans, we selected Derrick Henry and Kevin Byard in the second and third round. And those were good picks and foundational players for the teams that I was a part of.
Yeah, those are some really good players. Again, starting with the Freak. Again, he was is a different breed right there. Fun players to watch. Again, guys that got, again, you don't talk about the Titans or the Oilers, but mostly the Titans. You don't talk about the Titans without talking about those players. And again, to be a part of those, get to know them through the process. Some of those guys, 1-year scouts, 2-year scouts. Again, guys that you spend a lot of hours getting to know. But that's perfect. That's a good setup. So All-Star games are done. I've had some good back and forth with our Twitter and online draft scouts out there who have all the answers, as they always do, on whether All-Star games matter. Should players go at all? Should they practice at all? Should they practice and shut it down? from a scouting perspective, from being in any different role, how much do these All-Star games matter? Again, speaking specifically to the Big Two here with the East-West now and the Senior Bowl, how much do teams and scouting departments take away from these All-Star games?
You know, I think it's an important piece of the puzzle. And you've already evaluated the player based on his senior season or junior season, last season in college football. Now you get to see him in a little different setting, potentially a rise up in the ranks in terms of, like, let's just take a Dylan Loeb this year that went from a lower level school to getting to play in the Senior Bowl. You're talking about players that get to go and play against a higher level of competition in some situations. Sometimes this may be just a different setting, a player that maybe is a skilled player that gets an opportunity to catch more balls and in practice and really showcase skills. So it can be a great setting for the players, but also for the scouts. I think the interview phase, getting around the players, getting to see how they work day after day after day. I think when you start to read the internet, you see some of the internet scouts, these are the players that's on the forefront and on the minds of people because they're seeing them on TV or in practice every day. But don't forget those players that just didn't go to the All-Star games. They're going to be very important to the draft process as well. But I think All-Star games are very important and can help a player in a lot of situations, especially if they interview well, especially if they go in and have that production or show that ability that you saw on tape during the fall. So I think it can be very valuable to a player if they come in with the right mindset. If they don't, if they're not in shape, if they're just really don't have that intensity every day, it can hurt a little bit too. So yeah. It just depends on the player.
Yeah, no, I think you hit it. Again, this is an analogy that that our former colleague James Kirkland hit on last week as we were talking scouting. It's something I talk about all the time. It's a big puzzle, right? Again, we're, as scouts, you are putting together the puzzle. Again, for some players, it's 2.5 years. Again, Desmond Ridder was a 2.5-year puzzle for me. There's guys where it's a 1-year puzzle, a season puzzle, late riser puzzle. But again, all puzzle pieces. And you hit on a guy in Dylan Loeb who, again, you want to call him a little bit of a riser. Again, Quinyon Mitchell was another guy like that where the film, the tape, you looked at the tape all year, which was mostly Mac, and it was like, yeah, this guy's a really dominant player. From day one and rep one against Power Five and some of the best receivers in the country, he absolutely held his own. So it's a guy like that where Quinyon, up until the Senior Bowl, you're like, yeah, I like him, but that butt is now gone, I think, for the film, is that he answered every question on the field. Same thing for Dylan. Again, yeah, you look like the best player against a bunch of smaller school guys, which leads me to my question. With the juniors now coming, our chance to see guys like Quinn Miners and Ben Bartsch, again, it's something I mentioned in Neil's Friday wrap this last week, is I'm worried we're going to miss the opportunity to see a few of those guys really establish themselves. Do you think the juniors it's ultimately a net zero? You're going to lose some smaller school guys in lieu of some underclassmen, or is it a net positive either way?
You know, I think it's a positive. I think when players show up to these events, I only think it's a positive. I really think if you have that ability and you have the right mindset going in, I don't see how it can be a negative. I really think adding the juniors, adding the underclassmen, which are such an important part of the draft every year, because you essentially have less tape on them for the most part. You have less opportunity to evaluate them at the school if you start evaluating them as freshmen. But those juniors coming in and being in those All-Star games, I think is very important. Should have been done for a long time.
Yep, certainly. And it'll be, especially with the way roster attrition looked this year, it'll be interesting to see if expanded rosters. Again, let's make sure we have some slots for some of these smaller school players along with these underclassmen, because, again, we want to see all of them. Again, scouts want to see players. We want to spend time with them. We want to get up and close and personal, see the one-on-one stuff, which, again, these All-Star games really give us a chance to do. Really fantastic. You hit on that interview piece. Again, lots of different ways a player can interview. Obviously, you get, people running up to them after practices, real informal, maybe grab a piece or two. You've got your quote unquote speed dating, your 10 to 15 minute interviews where you're going to see all 32. Again, some teams really do good work there. Some teams kind of take it as a checkbox exercise, and then you've got your little bit more formals that teams can sign up for. When players are stepping into those interviews, what are the big things that they can do to either sell themselves, help themselves, or just answer questions?
You know, I train these players on interviews a lot at X3. And so we sit down and the first thing is be yourself. You know, try to tell your story. The story you have, whether it's football, personal background, it's your story. Tell it. Let the clubs get to know you, especially if they have a good personality and can banter back and forth. Mm-hmm. It's really important for somebody to get comfortable with the player because in some situations, like you mentioned, you may have 10 or 15 minutes. At other ones, you may have 30. You start to get a feel for the player. As a scout or as a coach, you start to envision that player in that meeting room, in the locker room, with that certain position group and say, does that person fit? Show them who you are. Don't just answer the questions, but show a little bit about your personality. Tell stories that relate to your personality. Also be inquisitive. Ask questions if you can to the clubs or to the scout and try to find out what they're thinking. So interact back and forth. I think the interview process is so important because there's so many opportunities that's missed at times on the club level, just not getting to know the player, taking the advice or taking the reputation that they have at the school from the coaches is fine. That's one piece of it. But you really need to feel comfortable yourself when you're interviewing this player to see if they fit. The fit is so important, not only from a mental aspect or an athletic ability, but also personality traits. I remember multiple times we interviewed players in the past that were dynamic players, but because of maybe an immaturity issue, an off the field issue, maybe we didn't have the position group room to handle that player. He could have been the negative influence. Maybe we did. Maybe you had a veteran group in that where they could maybe mentor or at least guide a potential trouble player with dynamic skills. So you have to be able to manage that. And I think that's one of the things that interview process can do for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, you talk about all these scouts are going into these interviews with probably a pretty good idea of what the player's character is going to be. They've heard it from a coach, from a pro liaison, from an academic, again, any number of people. That always used to be my first checkbox, right? Is this player who they said he was? And again, you get some of those situations where it's like, oh yeah, this guy's exactly. And yeah, I remember one or two where it's like, wait, what? Like, they describe you this way and you're getting the complete opposite, which again, all of a sudden you're having to go back. All right, I got to circle back on this player. I've got to go answer more questions because, again, this puzzle is not getting any closer to done. And, you know, maybe I'm further away than I thought. So always, always an interesting piece. And then, like you said, again, it's a great chance to really start to build and develop that rapport because it from here, we're about, you know, three and a half months away from the draft coming, there's going to be multiple interactions with these scouts. So you start building that foundation and guys that, you know, I've talked to Neil about on here, Josh Uche from Michigan was a guy like that where I started to get to know him through this process and just kind of built and built and built through the process. It was a long time to get to know him. Again, a different guy is in terms of just being a little more quiet, a little more cerebral, took a while. But again, this is All-Star Game was the time where that really started to build that foundation. So that's really fun. So interviews are not stopping. The interview process just only picks up from here. Teams are now heading back. Again, a lot of teams are starting to sit down in them this week. You get this week and next week. You've got a lot of different formats for February meetings. I remember when Thomas Dimitroff was the GM while I was in Atlanta, it was less than a week of February meetings, very much, you know, help Thomas as an established GM clarify his board a little bit. It was very little to, if any, film, very little, if at any, discussion. Again, it was really setting the board for a veteran GM. You flip the page now to Terry Fontenot, new GM, new staff, and it was almost a two full weeks. We were sitting down there, Anthony Robinson, now an assistant GM in Tennessee, director of player personnel, Kyle Smith, really ran those meetings. We were talking film. We were having discussions. A lot of different elements can go into those February meetings. What in your mind and through your process were the essential elements of February meetings that you wanted to see, to sort out, to hear, and to make sure you had answered?
You know, I think the two biggest pieces that I enjoyed was, let's come out of the All-Star games and get together and talk about what we saw. Don't wait till the meetings in April. Let's talk about what we saw together as a collective group. Maybe you have a brand new coaching staff. So within that process of evaluating some of the players, you get to know your coaches that you're going to have, what they want at their individual position from a skill set standpoint, which one fits their eye. They were able to get down on the ground and see some of the players. Did they what which ones fit? Maybe it's different than what the scouts thought. But you want to start to get to know that group. So, and then go over the interview portion of it, because a lot of guys didn't sit in on the interviews and really talk about what you found out about the player. Something maybe you need to dive into a little bit more in 2 weeks at the combine. Maybe there's a situation that arose, whether it's a football issue that really struggle with retaining information through the interview process. We need to get to know them a little bit more at the combine. Maybe it's just a personal trait that you need to figure out. Maybe they were having a bad day when you interviewed them, and you want to see if that's their true personality. So some things that may linger but continue on from the All-Star games to the combine, you want to be able to sort out, but I think you want to be able to get on the right page. Sometimes teams do cross scouting, where they give a scout a certain position at an All-Star game, and there's a little bit of the cross scouting there, different than maybe just an area scout or a regional scout. So get a different eye on the player in that 1 week setting and just kind of see what they think. Maybe a player rises a little bit, or maybe falls down a little bit from what the area scout thought ahead of time. So I think there's a lot of good information. I wouldn't overdo it. I wouldn't move guys up and down the board drastically, but I think there's something that can be learned from these meetings in February leading into the combine, which is really an important piece of the puzzle.
Yeah, certainly is. Again, not that anyone is more or less important. You're going to pick up important pieces on important players at any step through the process. Again, you hit on the cross-check thing. Again, when you start talking about a draftable player, you're probably going to have a minimum of four different scouts. And you're probably talking really up until, maybe six or seven different scouts plus two coaches that are going to watch that player. Again, a lot of different opportunities for discussion. Again, you think about the film. Again, some of those players where maybe there's a difference of opinion from, say, an area scout, regional scout, national scout. Hey, let's throw on some film. What game do you want to watch? Again, really start to put that pressure on the area scout. Hey, what was their best game? What was their worst game? Who was their best competition? Start to throw that on. Also, a tremendous opportunity for younger and newer scouts to hear, again, guys like Phil Emery, like Rustin Webster, like Joel Collier, guys that have been in the NFL in multiple roles, multiple positions. I mean, that used to be the highlight of some of the meetings that we sat in, was just you start getting some of those vets talking about all the laundry list of players and what they saw. Again, you can sit there and just eat it up and grow as a young scout. So something that's a lot of fun. When you say teams, you don't want to overdo February meetings and you don't want to do too much. What is a trap that happens, again, as scouts and scouting departments start to get ready for the combine and then pro days and the rest of the process, that the teams can start to fall into kind of during this, post All-Star game time?
You know, as football people, we start to envision a player on our roster. And that's a great thing, but can it also be a negative? When you envision that player being on your roster, you still have to remember the value that the player has. The value can be created through his ability, which is going to ultimately be where he gets drafted. Don't up the value just because you fell in love with the player or the personality and feel and start to envision that he can help the team right now. There's still a value on the player, and overvaluing a personality trait, maybe a competitiveness, maybe a captain material, you still have to put it in its place and not overdraft a player just because they started to show some of those traits you're looking for. They still have to go within the realm that creates the value to ultimately what they're going to do on the field. And I think that's where you have to be careful. And so when coaches start getting in the process, because they weren't in the process in the fall, that was scout driven. Maybe GMs get in the process a little late as well because they're managing their team all fall. But once the coaches get in the process, things start to change. Now they see them helping a certain position group. But remember, it's a full team. And when you only have seven draft choices, you're drafting for the full team, not just one position.
Yeah, certainly. I think that's a great element. You want to have it. The best teams usually have pretty good rapport with scouting coaches. You're going to have to work together. You're all building towards the same thing. But like you said, when those coaches come in, again, it can things can get a little sideways, especially, again, I'm going to say it for young scouts. You can. I've seen it. Coaches can railroad scouts, and you have to be careful of that. Hopefully, again, I'm sure you've been in the position as college scouting director where you may have to go to each party and be like, hey, let's relax, let's cool it on this, let's get the train back on the tracks, again, in whatever way. Coaches can be valuable. They can give great insight. They can talk about specifics of what they want. But again, coaches coach, scout. Now there's going to be crossover. There's going to be some elements of both, but definitely a whole nother factor that comes into it that is oftentimes forgotten about. So that's fantastic. So combine's coming up. Again, these teams, now the players, agents, everybody's now at this point really starting to set their time for the combine. What on the field at the combine can a player do to help themselves out?
You know, I think basically give us the look that they had on film and mimic that in the positional drills or the athletic skill traits. You know, whether you're talking about a short shuttle or a three cone, I've always, instead of looking at the numbers, I've always enjoyed watching them actually do the drill. How did they do the drill? The numbers are something that's fine and that's great, but I want to see how they perform the short shuttle, how they perform the three cone, some of the, the 40 yard dash. Are they faster in the back half of the 40? Or are they more explosive in the first 20 yards? You know, I think those are important things to kind of match and mirror and let it mesh with what the report says on the player. I think that's when you get a true indication of what the player really is, if you can actually watch everything that's happening at the combine. So on the field, I think it's important. Also, who's taking ownership out there? Who's being the leader? Who's feeling a little hurt and they want to sit on the side? But who's actually out there pushing and competing out there? Because it is a competitive environment. You're out there for yourself, but there is competition amongst your peers. And I want to see the players that want to compete. There's always players that don't. There's always players that are done for the day because they're a little tired from the long day. Those are not competitors. I mean, that those are questions I'm going to end up asking myself as a scout after it's all over. Why didn't the guy compete? Or why did this guy compete? You know, I think scouting is a series of questions you ask yourself, and why is an important one. Why is a player performing? Why isn't he? So I think those are important things.
I want to ask you y'all a couple of questions before we go too much further from the one guy who hasn't been a scout in the NFL. Number one, do you or would you ask in this era about NIL and money earned and those kind of things? Maybe in an attempt to get at motivation for players, because some of these guys have made a lot of money, and that's a factor when it comes to how they're going to look at the game. I guess that's number one. Number two, is February meetings a good time to kind of integrate your maybe your analytics and your tendencies and that kind of thing? Whereas you've got all the raw data, you've got all the film, everybody's seen them, gotten a pretty good look at them at this point. Now we can maybe look at how players like that have performed in the past or any number of ways they kind of cut the pie using math and numbers and all those kind of things. I'll let y'all answer it. However, take those questions however you want to.
Yeah. Blake, hit it. You lead us off.
Yeah. I think the NIL portion is part of football now, and you need to know it. You need to know, why did they transfer schools three times? Was it part of the NIL? Was it money driven, or was it opportunity driven? You know, was it, but if it's money, it's fine. It just, why was that such a big factor in you leaving? So I think the NIL is going to open up a whole different line of questioning that we didn't have before. Also, what did they do with their money? You know, I think I read a report, the Georgia quarterback just went out and bought a Lamborghini, a $2.5 million Lamborghini. That's great for him. But, you know, could you have done something else with the money? You know, is that going to be an issue when he comes to the league, or is he getting another $2.5 next year, which is great for him? But anyway, that's just, you know, part of it. So I think that the NIL is a big portion of it. What was your second question, Neil? I'm sorry.
Yeah. Is February meetings the best time to kind of integrate maybe analytics and off the field kind of stuff when you're kind of building your board and what have you?
Yeah.
Yeah, Blake, I think so. Go ahead.
Blake, I'll answer the NIL money question first, and then we'll jump into the analytics. And I think as it is for there's not a standard list of questions you ask every prospect. And I think the NIL just becomes another one that some guys have to answer and some guys don't. Again, to your point of why were you at three schools? And again, wow, you're driving a really nice car. And, you know, what about your family? What about your teammates? Again, it becomes another question that maybe that player has to answer. And again, it all goes back to the profile scouts have through the process. Again, is going to leave questions that they have to answer at an all-star game or coming out of an all-star game, at the combine, coming out of the combine. So again, the NIL question, again, like you said, motivation, is it a motivation? Does it matter? Again, just becomes another question that is now on the table. We don't have to try to act like these guys aren't getting paid. We can come out and directly ask them again, does that NIL money ultimately matter? On the analytics question, Blake, again, go ahead and lead this one off. Is this the best time to get analytics involved in the scouting process?
100%. You know, one of the things I think with analytics, you want to have, not just with the analytics department, but you want to have accountability in all the departments, coaching, scouting, and the analytics part. Don't let it come just at the end once they have all the answers to the test. Let's get that information out there now. Let's see how it changes through the process. Not only does a grade change at times, but also the view from the analytics department as well, coaching department. But let's get that information out there now so we're all on the same page leading into that combine. And really the important part of it are the maybe private workouts and pro days right after that. You need to all be on the same page so you're evaluating those players, not 2 weeks before the draft where everybody has already seen all the data and all the information. That can be discussed then. But, you know, I think not missing the window of that late February and March 5 weeks is really important. So I think getting the analytics involved is very important now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, Blake, it goes back to your point at the combine. At a minimum, a scout wants to see what we expect, right? Again, I liked you as a player. Your workout matched that. I was just okay. Yeah, your workout was just okay. I think that's where the analytics piece comes in at this time of year. Again, those guys, they can be really good at what they do, but again, analytics is a piece of the puzzle. Again, for some players, it may be a bigger piece, a more important piece. For some guys, it's, again, the analytics don't match anything about what the player is, overachiever, high character, whatever it may be. But again, getting it out on the table, having everybody understand, hey, this guy is going to be an analytics and numbers freak, again, for whatever that means, fast 40, he's going to check all the boxes from an analytics standpoint. You want to have it out on the table. Again, you're putting the puzzle together. You want to use all the pieces you have, use those pieces. Again, don't try to make them more important and don't try to, you know, relegate them and minimize them. Again, use it for whatever it is. One of the things I really think analytics is fantastic for this time of year is making sure you've got the right eyes on the right players. Again, what players analytically say you should like them a little more? Or on the flip side, hey, this guy's got a bunch of big grades. Analytically, he shouldn't be that high. And again, you've got more and more comparative data. You've got more and more data really across the college football landscape that you can use. Again, it's not going to ultimately set a board, but again, it can force you to go back and watch more film. Or, as I always say, ask more questions. And that's all you're trying to do. Analytics becomes a great checkbox tool. Again, force you to ask more questions or, you know, just, hey, his analytics fit exactly what we have in his profile. Perfect. I think this is a player that we like, can move on, whatever it may be. So I think those are excellent questions. Neil, you have anything for us?
Well, one other question, and I don't know if y'all are really well-versed on it, but it's something that was announced last year. The Big 12 schools will not have individual pro days this year. They will have one giant pro day, I think, over the space of about 6 days at the Star in Frisco. And that's very much of a departure from, you know, where pro days have typically been held, how they've been held. It's been a bit more of an informal kind of thing, I guess, would be one way to describe it, in that you're able to grab a kid and pull him aside and maybe ask him questions, maybe ask him to go through work, you know, maybe do positional stuff if you want to look at him in a certain way. Now we're looking at an event that starts on Wednesday, March 27th, and lasts until, I'm looking at the handout here, until Sunday. and it's going to be very regimented. It's going to have groups. It's going to be very similar to the combine itself. Do y'all see that as a net positive or a net negative for your evaluation based on how you normally would do evaluation?
You know, I think the part that I would be disappointed in is being around the coaches one more time. The coaches in the spring are so relaxed. They don't have a a season going on. And they're more apt to tell you things about the player because they're no longer on the team. So you're missing that component. They do bring coaches to this workout, but they don't bring the entire staff. Part of the staff that when I was a scout, I would go in and talk to, not necessarily just the coaches, but you're talking about secretaries, equipment guys, trainers, strength and conditioning. They're not going to be at this event. You're just probably going to have the head coach, coordinators, and maybe a few position coaches. But that's the piece that the scouts are missing, that extra information, the extra background type information that that be a part of. Yes, it's another long event instead of one day. The player usually has to get up for it for one day. Now he's going to be there for a long time. The interviews are going to be a little bit more standard instead of maybe getting somebody more in a comfortable setting. I remember going on campus multiple times and a player performed at the combine, maybe not as up to his standards, went to his pro day on campus in his environment, performed very well just because it was comfortable. That's out the window now. So I think you're putting these players in different situations that I don't think are the best for evaluation or for the scouts to evaluate.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I used to love pro days. Again, you talk about everybody in that building a little more relaxed. Again, these are guys that they are proud of in a lot of situations. They're happy to see them. I think about the families at a lot of these pro days. It is a big time pride thing for them to come in. Again, you see some family interaction. You see, again, I remember on multiple occasions meeting the children of some of these guys that were working out. Cause again, they were guys I like. You meet parents, you meet a bunch, again, everybody in their camp, which is a fun piece. Again, as you're putting that puzzle together, it's not just the interview. Hey, how is he interacting with his family over there? Or again, his group, and again, a comfortable environment, an opportunity for guys to go. Again, it's where most of the time where they've been working out all this time. Again, after pro day, sitting down with the players. Again, I remember it was a time where in Atlanta, if we were cross-checking or thinking about those UDFAs, the guys in my area that I loved, I was spending as much time with those guys, recruiting them, telling them how much I liked them. Again, another element to get to know these guys in a very relaxed personal setting. Again, they've been building, you know, up until this day. And this is really, for some players, they feel like the last opportunity to showcase everything they've done. They can kind of take a little bit of a breath and go. So I think it will be missed. Thankfully, I think we've got some schools in the SEC and the Big Ten that will never let go of their pro days, which I think will, you know, help the conference. You think about some of the big hitters we have, and it'll be an interesting experiment for the Big 12. And but I always loved pro days. It was a fun time of year. Cool, Blake. Let's hit some quick hitters. What is the worst thing an agent can do this time of year that just used to, you know, drive you crazy from a scouting perspective?
You know, I think the number one thing is, hey, where do you have him on the board? You know, it's they'll start calling in January as soon as they sign the player. It's where is he? Where you see him going? And then following up constantly about the player, telling me things about the player, sending me video clips of the film during the season. We've watched the tape. Now I want to get to know the player. I may talk to you about the person. I may need to talk to you about getting the person on the phone to talk to, but I don't need you to send me a scouting report from somebody else. That's what I do for a living. So I think the constant phone calls, asking me where he's getting drafted, but also telling me what other people think. I don't want to hear that. That's a no-no from agents.
Again, yeah, take your time. Is there anything an agent can do to help their guy this time of year?
Yeah, I think the simple things like understanding where your player is. If he's a PFA, if he's a potential, you know, priority free agent, talk to the teams about that. Talk to the teams about, hey, I really like your situation at D-line for my PFA defensive lineman. If somehow he doesn't go in the seventh round, I think your roster, your depth chart, and also the way you play fits. And then I start to look at it and say, you're right, he does fit. Okay, let's talk. We're going to keep this going, this communication going all the way up to the draft. But I love agents that actually don't try to oversell, but understand the value of their player. And especially if it's a UDFA, PFA type player, getting them already situated with 8 to 10 teams that may fit the skill set of their player.
Yeah, sounds like some awareness for both of those situations, right? Having some awareness for mm-hmm. you know, all aspects involved. Some of the big fluffy media stories start coming out. Again, this guy was number one PFF in whatever category. This guy was, you know, given back to the hospital every week, and this guy is just all Mr. Everything. Do those kinds of stories that often come out this time of year, how much do they play a role in personnel departments scouting these players?
You know, I think less within the scouting community, more within the coaching part of it, and definitely more within ownership and things like that. If you have a involved owner, you know, the more reports out there, where a player is going can really spook some people. And I think that you have to be careful about those type things. I do love hearing the stories of certain players. There's a couple of players in this draft alone that have great stories to tell. And I think some of those media things really give you an insight to the player.
Yeah, again, some of those stories, again, I remember it from, like, you kind of hit on it, your coaches or some of your ownership group, where they'll start coming in and asking questions. 9 times out of 10, it's somewhere in the scouting report. Scouts know. And again, it's just, yeah, it's part of his process, part of his profile, part of his character. So it can be a fun time. It can be a really good time for players. Again, at the end of the day, most scouts, I'm not going to say all, most scouts are hoping for the best for every one of these players. A scout rarely wants to see a player fail. And so good PR, testing well, whatever it is through the process, scouts want to see the best come out. And again, that's all going to be facilitated through the process.
Okay. Y'all have both alluded to the fact that you kind of, especially during pro days, and I hope we're not jumping the gun too much, it's not even March yet, but during that period of time, y'all were doing a little recruiting of the players that probably fit in that day 3/UDFA area. What were some of the tricks of the trade as far as trying to get guys to maybe be thinking along the lines of coming to your team? I know that some teams are doing some rather aggressive things. They're sending videos featuring the GM. They're talking about how many UDFAs have made the 53 or the PS in recent years. They may be talking about just how accommodating they try to be towards people that don't get drafted. What were the ways that y'all used to try to maybe hook some players, maybe hook some agents on the idea of coming to your teams, even if the money wasn't quite as much in that day, in that post day 3 rush?
You know, I love to talk about opportunity. And so I would go over the depth chart pretty significantly with certain players, definitely with the agents. And I would go player by player and really give an honest outlook on what that, you know, where this player could fit on the roster, the 53-man roster, not just the practice squad. And if a player had that opportunity to make it, talking about, like you said, some past players at maybe that position group that has made the team through that position coach, it's not afraid of having players that weren't drafted. Definitely an organization that's not afraid. I would also use part of your visits, your 30 visits. I would use at least 10 to 15 for those potential UDFAs, those guys that would come in, and we would recruit them. We'd have a dinner. We would go out to the stadium, have their name on the Jumbotron, have lockers with their jerseys made up, just like a recruiting visit in college, and they felt wanted. Now these kids are so, especially Power 5 players, are so accustomed to being wooed, whether it's through NIL money or recruiting. You're going to have to go that route a little bit to get them to sign, because they're going to go somewhere they feel loved and feel comfortable.
Yeah. So now, again, it always comes back. There's some teams who are known to pay and some teams that aren't. That's always going to be a factor in everything, right? Again, if it's guaranteed money, if it's good signing bonus, there's some teams that do, some teams that don't. But like you said, having some examples and players' names. Hey, you remind me of this guy. He came in. He was a practice squad year one, made our roster year two. Or, again, we are a veteran-heavy offense. We're going to have some rookies. Again, understanding your own roster. It's a really good opportunity for scouts, especially college scouts, to make sure they know who that NFL roster is, make sure you're well-versed at every position. What are your coaches thinking? What are your numbers going to be? What are you going to have, coming out of camp? Are you going to have, 40 spots kind of set at this point? Is it 45? Is there going to be any openings? Again, what is, as specific coaches, like you said, Blake, we've got a tight ends coach or running backs coach that loves a young development. These are the guys that he's been with, the guys that he's developed, guys that he's loved to play. Those are the things you try to do. You try to develop a little bit of rapport with the players, because that can go a long way. As the player tells his agent, "No, I just really, really feel good about this situation." But again, starts to grease the skids for that agent conversation as well. But man, I had a great conversation with your guy. Would love to have him. He would love to be here, and you can start to have that going.
What about on the RMC level? Obviously, you're talking about, when you're talking about the rookie mini guys, those are the longest of long shots. Did you find yourself trying to woo those guys as well? Or was that just kind of, whatever, we'll bring those in with whoever's at a local school that maybe have one trade or anything at all? I mean, was that something that was a priority as well? Or you mainly focus on the guys that may actually be contract guys?
I would try to, because I was in Nashville a lot, I try to go with some of the local schools, and really get guys on board for the rookie mini camps. And I wanted to really attract some of those local players that had talent, but also, give them that opportunity in those settings. So the ones that maybe had an outside shot of getting on that 90-man roster, but definitely somebody where the coaches too at those local schools love the local NFL team bringing those players in, made scouts visits a lot more enjoyable the next fall.
Yeah, certainly. I think that's, definitely you start talking about your local workouts as well, your local pro days, your local guys. Also, was it time the tryout guys and an injury guy that hardly played, that situation dictated he had to come out? Again, great opportunity to come out. Hey, you've got a 2-day workout or maybe a 3 practice workout to make a play. Again, some of your outstanding analytics guys that, again, there's nothing about their tape that says they should make it, but his analytics, his pro day numbers were super impressive. Guys that just jumped off the board, looked the part. Again, I don't know much about him, but again, he's worth it. Maybe you spend some time starting to grease the skids again for that. But again, for the most part, you're thinking about draftable and those UDFAs. Maybe a guy will pop up here and there, but probably in my experience, I'm not doing a lot of recruiting on those guys because they'll kind of take care of themselves come post UDFA time. Okay. Well, Blake, man, that was fantastic. Before we're done, we'll kind of get into a couple things. Hiring time is done. Bill Belichick, a name that I think everybody knows, Mike Vrabel, both left on the outside looking in. Maybe the end for Coach Belichick. Again, age may dictate that. Again, probably going to go down, at least depending on what Andy Reid does, as the greatest of all time, at least for a time. I would no doubt Coach Vrabel is going to resurface, if not this year, certainly next year. Jim Harbaugh is getting his staff rounded out in L.A. That's obviously making some impact on the Michigan Wolverines. On the front office side, Alonzo Highsmith sounds like he is headed back to the NFL, heading up to New England. Elliot Wolf is becoming the quasi-GM. Anything that jumps out to you guys as we end, for the most part, the hiring cycle?
I think along the coaching side, it's kind of interesting. You're seeing a lot of the younger coaches, whether they're coordinators or have a coordinator title, maybe didn't call plays, but you're seeing the collaboration. You hear that word between the GM and the coach a lot. Where Belichick and Vrabel are more alphas, they're going to want total control. And you see them they interviewed but didn't get the jobs, even though both of them have had very successful head coaching careers. Pete Carroll's another one that was kind of a person that was in charge in Seattle and was kind of out. So, you're starting to see those personalities. Harbaugh probably being the one that was hired in this cycle that's going to have a lot more control. So, you know, it's kind of interesting to see those guys kind of go away. I'm happy for Elliott Wolf if that's the role that they're going to give him. He's done his time. I think Elliott's a good scout. He's got a good reputation. Bringing Alonzo in, a veteran scout that they worked with each other in Green Bay, I think that's a good fit for that group. And adding some different blood in that organization, I think, will be good. And I like their head coach in Gerard Mayo. So,
speaking of alphas, I think what Alonzo ran up against a little bit, I don't think he had the power that he thought he was going to have in Miami. He has the pedigree, obviously, there, as well as the pedigree in the NFL and what he's accomplished there. I think with Mario Cristobal there, and I mean, you know, talk about type A's. From what I've heard, he's not an easy guy to work with. And I think Alonzo wanted to kind of get back to a place where he's comfortable. And, you know, the Browns weren't winning championships when Dorsey and Elliott and Zoe were there, but they were pretty competitive. They kind of got the train back on the tracks. And I anticipate that they'll do the same in New England. I mean, they both have, I have a lot of respect for what Green Bay does on draft day. They both got that Packers pedigree. Obviously, Elliott's dad was a very accomplished GM in his own right. And I think that it's kind of like what Blake said. I mean, this has been a long time coming. But hopefully he does eventually rise to that GM role. I think he's earned it. And I think he's can be really good in that role. I was kind of surprised that Gutekunst got the GM job in Green Bay when he did. And Elliott kind of got passed over. No disrespect to Brian. But, yeah, I mean, he had a lot of talent in that front office. I guess they had to pick somebody.
Yeah.
As far as head coaches, I think the Belichick probably is in the bullpen in Dallas right now. I think McCarthy gets a one-year reprieve. And if things don't work out, you know, he gets to come back. Again, we don't know what's going to happen with Dak just yet. And Jerry Jones has been a little negative towards him, maybe. But I still just kind of reading the tea leaves, and I don't have any inside information here necessarily. It seems like if things don't work out this year, then he's got Belichick to come in, and presuming they bring Prescott back, and I think they probably will. Then they've got a veteran quarterback. They've got a lot of talented players there, a lot of playmakers. I think Belichick maybe struggled a little bit. You know, obviously when he lost the quarterback, it wasn't as easy to just kind of fit in pieces around the edges and win the way he had when Tom Brady's there. If he comes into Dallas, I think he's already got a GM who's knows exactly what he wants to do and has done it for a while and has built a pretty talented team, given Jerry his due, and Will, of course, and everyone else there. But I think that would be a really good fit for Belichick if he's comfortable just being the coach. And I can't imagine he wouldn't be, given that I think his ultimate goal is to, what, get 12 wins? Is that what he is away from being all-time? So I think that's going to happen there. In Vrabel, I think to some degree the same. Based on what I've heard, they did not have a good situation in the front office there of late. And I think that maybe Vrabel was probably ready to start fresh somewhere anyway. I think you're right. It's going to be some team that wants to kind of give him the keys and allow him to bring his own guy in there and what have you. And, you know, I think that's become a far more popular mode of doing things now. I mean, I don't think John Lynch is the GM in San Francisco if Kyle Shanahan doesn't kind of handpick them. And again, I'm not being critical of anybody, but I just think the model has changed and we're seeing that now. And I think it's going to take a somewhat of a special situation for Vrabel to come back in. It's just going to be someone that wants to maybe make a sea change in the way they operate their team. They want to kind of give him the keys to kind of get in there and get started on doing things. So I don't think there are any major surprises in who got hired and who didn't get hired. But I think of the 2025 offseason being not a different season altogether, but maybe a continuation of this one, given some of the coaches that are on the market left over that got let go this year.
Yeah. I mean, Blake hit on it with – you talk about it with players being a fit for your team. Your head coach and your GM have to be the first fit that makes sense for a team. Again, if you're talking about a shared, hey, you're going to scout, you're going to coach, it still has to come together, and it's got to come together there first. You talk about, again, the situation with Belichick and, you know, Jerry Jones. Again, you're talking about a GM/owner and a GM/coach. Again, that's a marriage, maybe the only one that would work for the way that Bill wants to operate. Again, you're talking about Vrabel, who does not have, at this point, the sustained success that Bill has to be able to ask for that. Now, we'll see where he ends up, if he ends up with that fit. But again, the fit has to be right. He better have somebody in there that knows who Mike is, and Mike knows who they are. And that did not appear to be the case. Obviously, the case with John Robinson when he got let go midseason, and they bring in Rand Carthon. And, you know, unfortunately, that did not last long enough for either of them to, pan out. And again, it'll be interesting, I think, for Joe Horitz out in Baltimore, where the Baltimore personnel department is highly, highly credited for helping keep that roster up. Now he's going to go in there with the head coach that's going to want to do his things his way. It's going to be a really interesting match to see those guys. Obviously, there's a relationship there going from one Harbaugh to another. But again, you think about that fit has to be right. There's going to be a few more, I'm sure, that'll shake and turn out here. Coach Quinn bringing in Kingsbury. There's still going to be some changes here after the Super Bowl this next week. But we're getting close to knowing where everything's at. And now teams can really start to build. So we got one NFL game left. It wouldn't be right to let you guys go without a Super Bowl prediction. We got the Chiefs. We've got the 49ers. We got a whole bunch of Taylor Swift fans out there. What are your predictions for the Super Bowl?
You know,
I missed both my picks last time. I'm going to let Blake go first.
It's hard to go against Patrick Mahomes the way he's playing. You'd asked me that 5 weeks ago. I may have had a different question, a different answer, but he's playing at such a good level right now. It's kind of hard to go against him. Even though I really like San Francisco's offensive firepower, and I think the 2 weeks off is really going to be beneficial to McCaffrey and Debo Samuel. But I'm going to go with Kansas City in a pretty close game. This should be a very competitive game.
Neil, surely you're going to get one right at some point, right?
Well, I don't know. I'm trying to get my streak going here. I'm going to take the upset again. I think – I don't know. Do we know what the line is, y'all? I think Baltimore's – I'm sorry, Baltimore. Kansas City is a pretty strong favorite. Am I wrong on that? Do y'all know?
I'm looking now. Let's see. What do we have here? Oh, no, that's not going to be the spot where I want it. Let's go with the prediction. You start talking, I'll find it.
I don't know. I think the Niners are a team that don't have any obvious weaknesses. I think their offense is really strong. People kind of go back and forth on Brock Purdy. I mean, he has a bad game. Everyone thinks he's a system quarterback. He has a great game, and he's something special. But I think he'll do enough, and I think they've got a great ground game. I'm a big fan of Kyle Shanahan and that defensive line. I still think they haven't played their best game in the playoffs yet, and I think if they can – put any kind of pressure on Mahomes, then I think good things can happen there. I really respect the Chiefs' defense, and obviously you have to respect Mahomes, but I think that the Niners can do enough to win this game.
So you feel that the 49ers winning would be an upset?
I don't know. I don't know. I haven't
Vegas
looked at
would
the line.
Disagree. It looks like San Francisco is about -2, -2.5 right now. So you're talking, again, less than a field goal. You're basically taking even money. You're picking a winner. So, Neil, I'm going to go out. I agree. I think the 49ers are my pick. Blake, I completely agree. I don't know how I can pick against Patrick Mahomes. I mean, the guy just wins, right? The guy, and you start talking about the combination of him and Andy Reid, two guys that, I mean, you talk about great pairings. I mean, all time. And, again, you can't separate Belichick and Brady, you can't separate Mahomes and Andy Reid. And it is, you know, when you talk about for both guys, a match made in heaven. But again, you start talking about that roster and 2 weeks, I think, for Debo Samuel to be healthy. Obviously, Christian has continued to look as good as he has all year. Again, if a quarterback wasn't going to win the MVP in Lamar Jackson, it's got to be CMC. But again, 2 weeks for that for Debo. The defense, I expect to show up. Again, the over-under is 47.5. I'm taking the under that. I think we're going to have a low-scoring game. Brock Purdy, I've said what I've said about him. He is what that offense needs to operate efficiently. He's not going to go out and win it. Maybe he's going to make a play or two with his legs, as we saw late against Detroit. But you're going to see again, it's not a negative thing. He's going to be a game manager that's going to keep that offense on track. And the defense, I think, is going to make some plays. I think San Francisco just has a little bit more talent that's ultimately going to come. And I'm going to take a low scoring, really good, really fun game. But I'm going to take the 49ers to win this one. And Kyle, I think the world of him, was fantastic offensive coordinator. You know, has put together a fantastic roster. So it's going to be really fun to see either way. For everybody out there, you can enjoy the game. You can enjoy the commercials, whatever you want. Let me quick mention, check out agentlive360.com. If you are an agent, if you are someone managing clients, PR, whatever it is, agentlive360.com is for you. Individual player profiles, invoicing, data management, everything you need. Hop on there, agentlive360.com. Request a demo. You'll get me. We won't just look at the demo of the software. We will talk some football as well. So make sure you go check out agentlive360. Next week, I'm fired up. We're going to dive into some comments made by a guy we've talked about a little bit, in quarterback Tom Brady, with one of his former teammates and a guy that stuck a dagger into my heart in overtime. That is running back James White of the Patriots. Going to be a really fun conversation, a former player's perspective on what Tom said. And you can hop out there, find those videos of Tom. Was he knocking the NFL? Was he knocking today's players? We'll find out what James thinks. Blake, again, thanks for being on. Really fun. If you'll have us, we'll have you back, most certainly.
I'd love to. It's good to be on with you guys. It's always fun talking football, especially leading up to the draft, which is my favorite time of the year. Let's get these games over with, get to the draft.
Spoken like a true, you know, front office personnel guy, you know, I don't completely disagree. It is a fun time putting rosters together, you know, going full Madden franchise mode and, you know, getting all the scouting done. So, Neil, as always, great having you. Neil, of course, is at Inside the League on X. Blake, are you on social media?
You know, I am. It's at Blake_Bedd, BEDD on Twitter. I put some tweets out there at times, but anyway, that's my at.
Perfect. And I'm at RightStepADV. For any of us, tweet us questions. It's not called Twitter, so do you tweet anymore? Do you X questions? Who knows? Only Elon has the answer for that. But enjoy the game this weekend. If you want to enjoy the commercials, enjoy halftime, enjoy all the shots of Taylor Swift. But regardless of what you're doing, keep scouting.